present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a Lonely Hearts ad found in the Gosport Journal and read by Charlotte Green.
Wanted lady for shy, caring 26-year-old gent. You must be 20 to 30, experienced at giving grief, spending money and rearranging furniture. Good sense of humour, advantageous.
Thanks to Mrs. O. Marjorie's son from Lee on the Solent for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Jeremy Hardy. And challenging them on my left, Alan Corran and David Aranovich. And before we start round one, here's a piece from the 1998 Hobbies Annual.
Metal pickup tool, ideal for those with large fingers and tiny parts.
Thanks to John Rogers of Camberley for spotting that. Francis, whose red box sent us packing off to work?
I haven't the faintest idea. Next question, please. No, I think it's Gordon Brown's big week, isn't it? And I think he delivered a budget somewhere along the line, but that was awfully boring, so I didn't really pay attention to that. So he went to a children's tea party, which was much more exciting. And it was an amazing picture of, well, several pictures of Gordon trying to look casual in his open-necked shirt. I mean, this is a man who was born in a suit and who wears a suit to mow the lawn on Saturday mornings. But there he was, trying to look relaxed as he passed round the sandwiches and the cheesy Watsits, saying, "Now you can only have one of these until resources allow you to have a second. It would be imprudent to drink any more of that Ribena. You never know where it'll get you." Looking at the pictures of this classic New Labour children's party, I saw on the Teletubby paper plates, one of them seemed to have pomegranates on it. Did you see that? I thought, what sort of child has pomegranates at his third birthday party? The answer is a New Labour child, obviously. I think he's jolly lucky he didn't get slices of polenta instead of his birthday cake. But anyway, Gordon, having done his bit as Mr. Chuckles, the children's entertainer, then went off to the House of Commons and delivered a budget.
Does anyone know what Peps and Tessas and Ice is? I think the whole budget was pitched at those slightly depraved people who listen to Moneybox. Those people who invest 80% of their income to stop it falling into the wrong hands.
Especially that wonderful programme called Moneybox Live.
Yeah. That's why they have a disco, isn't it?
Make it sound even more exciting.
A lot of our listeners have started with Moneybox. They might be rather offended.
And graduated onto the News Quiz. Up the food chain they come.
Jeremy, why did Victoria see the bill about a John?
Now, this is the CD arms dealer, Jonathan Aitken, who procured his teenage daughter to lie on oath for him. So this poor 17-year-old child has been arrested for perjury just because Dad said, "You're not busy, are you, the next couple of days, darling? You wouldn't mind coming to court for me. Help Daddy out. Daddy's in a spot of bother at work. Hope you don't mind. A couple of days off school will be fun."
Well, it was take your daughter to work day, and in Aitken's case...
These are the further adventures of former Tory Cabinet Minister Jonathan Aitken, who was arrested and released on bail without charge. So we have to be awfully careful what we say about the serial lying freeloader. It's reported that Mr. Aitken is now suffering from severe financial problems and may have to sell his £1 million house. So it's not all bad news. 2 points to you, Jeremy, and David, who had a touching story of a room with no angle.
I heard this week that the Daily Telegraph has sacked all its crossword compilers and replaced them all with a machine. And it's quite obvious where they've all come to work. They've come to work here.
I think this is about... It's about Willie, isn't it?
It is.
It's about Miss Willie and the other Willie.
Oh, right.
Slick Willie and his friend.
But she touched him. She said breathlessly, "He put his hands on me." And we said, "Yes, yes." And then she said, "He took my hand and put it on him." It was all very biblical. And I don't know where on him she put it, but there was no angle.
No,
we have heard this about Bill before, but I assume that was...
And they begat a special prosecutor. That's the Oval Office, isn't it? Because he hadn't synchronised his excuse for this, Willie, because his lawyer put out a statement saying he never touched her in any shape or form. And then the White House press spokesman, Mike McCurry, said, of course he gave her a big hug and kissed her on the forehead. That's what he does to everyone who comes into the Oval Office. I think Gerry Adams is going there quite soon.
Alan, your piece of music.
Get get up in the morning, it's the paper bread, sir, so that every mouth can be paid.
Israelite.
The wife and my kids step up and I leave me. Darling, she said I was here to receive.
Oh, Israelite.
What was the music? And then I
that was the Israelites by Desmond Dekker. Which cook
that was Israelites? Get off.
It is. It's an old Hebrew tune. I mean, I'd recognise it anywhere.
Well, anyway, it'll be about Cookie not going for dinner. He was snubbed. Red, red robin, bob, bob, bobbing along. It was a very sad picture of him, because he takes so much trouble, because he represents his country, and I know this because, well, Francis does too, being follically challenged. He has this one lick of hair, and he looked like George Arliss playing Disraeli, because the umbrella sort of blew inside out as he was at Ha Homa, and this slick of hair was sort of plastered down. And I thought, he's pitiful. I am sorry for Robin Cook for the first time. And anyway, he went to Ha Homa, this contentious settlement, and he shook hands with an Arab, as a result of which the Israelis wouldn't have him for dinner. Nothing, doesn't get up. No fruit, nothing. Don't eat first, go. And there's a little portion of chopped liver going dry somewhere in somewhere in Tel Aviv. It's a sad thought.
But imagine a place where the penalty for misbehaving is not having dinner with Bibi Netanyahu. I mean, I want to live there, really. I mean, this is not just a kind of culture thing.
But he did the same thing in India last year, I think. When he went with the Queen, he offended the Indian government by talking about Kashmir, and they banned him from a banquet. It's probably why he looks so thin and miserable.
It must be some...
Tormann never gets a square meal, just as the plate's put in front of him. He commits some diplomatic faux pas, and they snatch it away and say, go and get a takeaway. Can't cook, won't cook, I think.
There was better news for Mr. Cook this week. His divorce has finally come through, so he's now free to marry his new love. And who's the lucky lady? His ex-wife. And the scores are Francis and Jeremy 4, but Alan and David 4 points. And we start round two with a clipping from The Independent.
The government joined forces with a cancer charity to promote an increase in consumption of high-fibre cereals as a defence against bowel cancer. The campaign, launched yesterday in the Commons, followed an early day motion. Signed by dozens of MPs.
Thanks to Elizabeth Heap from London for sending us that. Francis, whose dogged remarks made the magpies mad?
Oh, it's the directors of, well, not all the directors, but two of them, of Newcastle Football Club.
It is.
Freddie Shepherd and Doug Hall,
yep.
I think they're called. And they were caught in a Spanish brothel by the News of the World. And to try and distract the News of the World reporter from all these naked women around them, they started talking about football. And they said Alan Shearer was a little goody-goody who they called Mary Poppins. And I can't understand why that's an insult. I think Mary Poppins is admirable figures. Dick Van Dyke is the villain of that film. That ridiculous Cockney accent. You know. A sweep is as lucky as lucky can be. Nowhere is there a more happier bloke. Sounds like Stephen Hawking, doesn't it? They were very rude about Geordie women as well, weren't they? They said they were dogs. But since we're a nation of dog lovers, I don't see this as a problem. I thought it was a compliment. But Newcastle fans are frightfully upset and demand their resignation. And then these people, Shepherd and Hall, apologise. But it didn't do them any good because the fans hate them even more.
The vice chairman, this Douglas Hall, it said, was therefore cheating on his 35-year-old wife, Tanya, who was a former Miss Britain wet T-shirt winner.
The question concerned the chairman and vice chairman of Newcastle United Football Club. They then apologised later for the remarks they'd made, saying that the women of Newcastle were not dogs. Really, they were lovely lasses, but that didn't have quite the desired effect. Jeremy, whose four changes were considered too many.
Yeah, this is our glorious leader. James Boyle used to work at Radio Scotland, and apparently he was affectionately known as McBurt, it said in the paper. Affectionately. No, I don't think you become known as McBurt affectionately. You might be called Sweetheart or Bunnykins affectionately, but McBurt is on a par with McHindley or McGurbles, isn't it, really? And now he runs Radio 4, but he's not only a boss to us, he's judge, jury and executioner. And we like him very much. So when are we on now? When does this programme go out now?
3 o'clock on Sunday mornings. The biggest row centres on the shifting of yesterday in Parliament to a slot where no one can find it. MPs were infuriated to find that if they wanted to learn what was going on at Westminster, they'd actually have to go there. David, here's a piece of music for you to listen to.
You promised me green grass, not to tell what you heard. Whispering grass, say, you can't keep you a word. Keep you a word, sing lofty.
Why do you whisper green grass? Why tell the trees what ain't so? Whispering grass, the trees don't have to know. No.
Don't. I know the answer.
Well, you work for The Independent on Sunday, the only paper which you can roll up and smoke. Why is there no smoke without prior experience?
This is the consequence, isn't it, of one of those studies that American academics are paid vast amounts to undertake.
No.
And what they... they're not paid
this is not the question.
It's not the one I think it is.
No, it isn't.
It's something else entirely.
It's about Jim Pryor's son.
This is the one about Jim Pryor's son. Jim Pryor's son, David Pryor, who's 43, and therefore much of an age with many of us here in this room, admits to having smoked cannabis and having inhaled and having enjoyed it and that he doesn't see anything wrong with it and that he will convince the Conservative Home Affairs spokesman of this case soon.
Yep. Well, it's David's newspaper, The Independent on Sunday, that's been going on about this drug, this cannabis, for years and years. And Pryor wrote a piece for them last Sunday, owning up, saying he'd smoked it when he was a boy, when he was in his 20s, and it didn't do him any harm. And he's supporting their campaign, I think. Though, when you see he's become a Tory MP, you wonder if this can be right. He said he didn't make him hang out with the wrong sort, didn't give him delusions or anything like that. But he is nevertheless the Conservative MP, David Pryor.
Of course, David Pryor doesn't smoke cannabis anymore since becoming a Tory MP. If he wants to enter the dreamy world of semi-consciousness, he simply listens to one of Peter Lilly's speeches. One of the MP's main gripes was the inconsistency in police attitudes to the drug. In stricter jurisdictions, selling cannabis can mean a long, arduous session in the interview room, whereas other forces are quite happy to pay the market rate without haggling at all. Alan, who won one's approval for something at the weekend?
Yes. It was a dodgy story. Prince Charles spent the night at Sandringham with Peter Mandelson. and the Queen thought this was OK. It's a mattress-sharing story. You've got Peter Mandelson, you've got Camilla Parker Bowles, and you've got Prince Charles.
There's a book out about the royal family with the names all changed so that you can't prove it's the royal family. It's like one of these films that at the start it says this is a true story and at the end it says any resemblance to any character living or dead is entirely coincidental. And they've made it like Camilla Parker Bowles is called Camille and Poke Me Bowles or something. it's all different. There's like, it's sort of like Queen Anthea and Prince Graham and stuff, and it's all, you know.
But the event was organised, wasn't it, by Fionn Jenkins's sister,
Manon.
And the weekend consisted of going out to Norfolk churches to study ecclesiastical architecture under the guidance of a 95-year-old Dowager Duchess Lady Harrod or something like that. So it sounds like it was an incredible amount of fun.
The Majesty of the Queen approved Camilla Parker Bowles' weekend stay at Sandringham with Prince Charles. The couple reminded party guests of that other once-forbidden love match with Mrs. Parker Bowles in the role of Wallace and Charles as Gromit. And the scores at the end of round two are Alan and David 8, but Francis and Jeremy just nudging into the lead with 9 points. And we start round three with a letter from an airline pilot spotted in the police newspaper, The Law.
This is a personal letter to express my thanks to Essex Police Force for the assistance we received during the Stansted hijacking. The professionalism of Essex Police Force, which was shown in the handling of the incident, is of the highest order, which resulted in the safe execution of the passengers and crew.
Thanks to Mr. J. Morgan of Colchester for that. Francis, can you remember where you were when lots didn't sell?
Auctions.
Yes.
Were these the Kennedy scraps? There was an auction which was nearly called off in America of bits of President Kennedy's naval fluff and his laundry list and all sorts of things. I mean, there was a scrap of paper he doodled on the 21st of November 1963, and this went for, I think, $20,000 or something.
Because it was 3 days after he was shot, wasn't it?
So. Yes. No, he was shot on the 22nd, I think. Anyway, it's just bits and pieces, and his former secretary, I think, had nicked all this stuff when he died. She gave it to somebody else, who then cashed in.
Items offered included many in strange taste, such as a statement to police by Lee Harvey Oswald reading, "I know it's strange, but I really can't remember where I was when President Kennedy was shot." 2 points to Francis. Jeremy, here's your piece of music.
New York's a go-go and everything tastes nice. Poor little greenie. Get back on. Gene Genie lives on his back. Gene Genie loves Jimmy Stacks. His outrageous screams and he bawls. Gene Genie, let yourself go.
Jeremy, where has gene magic been frozen out?
Iceland, not the country. The freezer centre, which is a bold move. Iceland is not selling any own brand stuff with genetically modified things in it. Because genetic things are weird and will cause mutation and we'll pass it on.
As we say, it's walking off the shelves. Yes.
You have a shelf life of 2 years and a half life of 20,000.
The thing I don't get, Jeremy, is what's wrong with this stuff?
It's spooky, scientific, weird stuff.
But it's like everything else.
It's just weird. Don't ask me. It's just bad. It's the devil's business. It's like the microwave. It just shouldn't work. It's wrong. The microwave is the devil's tumble dryer. You should just have a plain omelette and be thankful in there.
This is the announcement by the Iceland food chain. They won't be stocking any genetically engineered foodstuffs. What a comfort it will be to consumers to know that their deep-frozen, reconstituted, fish meal-based chicken nugget-top pizza curry meal has not been mucked around with. Iceland's chairman, Mr. Malcolm Walker, explained he didn't trust genetically altered foods because he said, quote, "The novel Jurassic Park accurately described the background to this new industry." Similarly, it was after he saw the film Spice World, he stopped selling economy packs of jammy tarts. However, the Ministry of Agriculture has assured the public there is no risk attached to modified soya. Their spokesman said he'd been feeding it to his children for years and they could count the number of problems it had caused on the fingers of one ear. David, why might the pearly gates need opening a little wider?
Oh, yes, Alan, I don't know this one.
You're on your own, kid. No, I don't.
I know.
It's about teeth.
No, it's not. We know. Christians are fat.
Oh, right. Right. Yes.
Christians are fat. They only have to look at some loaves and fishes and put on weight. And people who hear me say that won't be angered by it. They'll just pity me and pray for me. And, because the inner and the outer being are very much, you know, attuned after me for you to be healthy, because in order to be... mentally attuned, you have to be physically fit, and in order to run a marathon, you have to be mentally ill.
Well, it's proportionate. The fatter you are, the more religious you are. Yeah. It's an American Sociological Survey. So Bernard Manning is fantastically devout, whereas poor old Mother Teresa... Something has gone horribly wrong in this survey, I think.
Yes, this is the research into links between body weight and religion. Kenneth Ferraro of Purdue University in Indiana started by dividing people into three groups: grossly overweight, clinically obese, and normal for Midwestern Americans. He then compared these groupings with religious beliefs and found that Christians were slightly fatter than non-believers, which not only explains the expression Catholic Mass, but also suggests that Brian truly is blessed. Alan, who proved he could lose his head scientifically?
Yes, this is
A wonderful list in The New Scientist, which celebrated his 42nd birthday by going past some of his wonderful news stories. And there's a man who cut his own head off to show how what a sense of humour he had. He took a chainsaw. Well, his friend said, "I'm more manly than you," and chopped off his left hand. The other bloke said, "Watch this," and removed his head. A lot of other very good stuff in The New Scientist. It's a serious, serious journal.
They also had a list of pointless instructions that they collected off of supermarkets.
They were very good. Those the pill ones. They were about sleeping tablets, saying these may cause sleepiness and be careful.
Yeah, there was one in a packet of nuts saying contains nuts. Yeah. And there was one on a meal that you have to heat up saying may be hot after heating.
And presumably there was a notice on the chainsaw saying do not use on neck.
Yeah.
This refers to The New Scientist collection of bizarre feats and general weirdness of vaguely scientific bent published in a new book. The weirdest story of all concerned Polish farmer Krzysztof Azinski, who, with a bunch of pals, tried to prove their manliness by stripping off and beating each other with frozen Swedes. What's known at the Athenaeum Club as Tuesday night.
You sure it wasn't Swedes that were beating one another with poles?
The scores at the end of round three are Alan and David 10, but Francis and Jeremy leaping ahead with 15 points. And before we start the final round, here's a piece from the Daily Mirror.
Jürgen Klinsmann last night announced he will quit Tottenham after a sensational row with boss Christian Gross. The German captain clashed with Gross over tactics, but the striker claimed, "I was only obeying orders."
Thanks to many dozens who sent that in. Francis, your piece of music. Francis, who might have been well chuffed at a church window?
It's Thomas the Tank Engine.
It is.
What was that, then?
It's called Windows Are Nice by Alan Blakely.
Oh, I see. Thomas the Tank Engine, who was created by a very great man called the Reverend Wilbert Audrey, who died the other year. I spoke to the Reverend Wilbert Audrey before he died. He was a very nice chap.
And how long son, before he died?
long enough to give me an alibi. Because he was a man of the cloth and a train spotter...
What, heroin, you mean?
They've created a stained glass window in his memory, which has little number. It has James, Gordon, Percy.
It's blasphemous, isn't it? It's like having the statue of the Blessed Pingo. And,
I watch Pingo and Thomas the Tank Engine every day, and there's a whole generation of children who grow up, and when you say the name Ringo Starr, they say, "Oh, what, you mean the Thomas the Tank Engine bloke?" Mm. And you say, "Well, he used to be famous for something else." And they say, "Oh, what, he was Yasser Arafat before that, wasn't he?"
The window will come in handy for illustrating the parable of the talents, in which people buy a railway company at a knockdown price, do absolutely nothing, sell it on a few years later for many millions of pounds. Next to Thomas the Tank Engine is a window depicting all the stations of the cross, those served by Richard Branson's Virgin Trains. 2 points to Francis. Jeremy, how may we all be karaoke kings?
Ah, they've discovered something that makes you sound like Elvis Presley, and it's called Guinness. And anybody can drink 7 pints of Guinness and stand up in the corner of a pub and to them sound exactly like Elvis Presley.
But he's going to have a whole range of voices. You can buy a karaoke machine with your favourite voice, so you can just do your Marilyn Monroe impersonation or Tony Blair, you know, you just give an ordinary speech and it comes out saying, "Look, hey, hi, look, you know, it's cool."
Can't get Charlotte Green saying Southwark Zero, can you? I'd buy that.
You should get Elvis to do the shipping forecast. Morph to you.
You ain't nothing but a hound dogger.
The programme follows a successful prototype which makes people sound just like the Beatles. Oasis have been using it for years. 2 points there. David, whose chat-up technique wasn't a roaring success?
It's Hercules the Lion, who is Aston Villa's mascot. And they scored a goal, didn't he? I mean, and usually he jumps up and down all over the players, as they do, but he's been told not to do that. So he jumped all over a very pretty young woman.
Miss Aston Villa.
And when Aston Villa scored, because guilty of the sin of Clinton. And she apparently didn't object, but the Aston Villa thought this was inappropriate.
But actually, the board said that he was being sacked because it was unprofessional. I thought, what is the professional body that lays down standards for men dressed in lion outfits at football grounds that show what is acceptable behaviour?
How could you be Miss Aston Villa? It's not like being Miss Morecambe.
Wet T-shirt isn't a place either. You didn't object there. Alan, how might little green men experience fringe benefits?
I don't know why I've got this. I'm deeply moved by it. They're sending 10 million hairs into space. I mean, not that sort of hair. They're actually sending to 10 million hairs that I could have given them if they'd come and asked me. Taken out of my shoebox, or I'm keeping them against the day when superglue can do something serious for me. An American rocket is going to the fringes of the galaxy with a box full of hairs in the hope that an alien creature will open the shoebox full of hairs and say, blimey, they're human beings. All we've got to do is clone them. And then suddenly 10,000 human beings will spring from each hair. It doesn't say what sort of hairs. I mean, if they're short and curly, anything could happen. They could end up with 10 million presidents standing on the side. Blimey, we asked for Miss Aston Villa. What's this, a box of...
Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
This is from a travel guide sent out by Sovereign Holidays to people who are going to Norway. Contents page says, Guide to Scandinavia. Contents, Oslo, Norway, Bergen, Norway, Trondheim, Norway, Copenhagen, Denmark, Stockholm, Sweden, Helsinki, Finland. This handy guide has been specially prepared for your enjoyment and information. We trust that it will enhance your knowledge of Italy.
Jeremy.
This is sent in by David Robertson from Forfar, and it's from the Glasgow Herald, and it's a judge replying to the accusation that he was out of touch. And the judge says, We tend not to live in the council estates, he conceded, but I actually happen to live very close to one, and our post office is there, and our local newsagent is there, and our greengrocer is there, and my gardener lives there. So I think I've got a little bit of an idea what goes on. Judge Martin Tucker recently jailed a bag snatcher for life.
David.
Yeah, this was sent in by Derek O'Carroll, who's an independent reader who came down for long enough to cut this out. And he said, a man in Fairfield, California, who claimed that a woman called Brenda had cut off his penis has now admitted that he did it himself. Alan Hall wouldn't disclose the reasons for the act or why he'd described the imaginary attacker to the police. Doctors were unable to reattach the organ. Mr. Hall is a pipe fitter.
Alan.
There's nothing like that in Hendon, Simon, you'll be glad to know. I have a little gobbit culled from last week's Hendon Times. There's a woman who stole a camera from the Brent Cross Dixons, told Hendon magistrates last week that it was a present for her probation officer.
Thank you all, Alan. Let's look at the final scores. Alan and David, 14. But this week's winners, Francis and Jeremy, 19 points. And before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Hawth Talk magazine sent in by Lizzie Calder of Crawley, Sussex.
The great soprano ended her recital with a touching rendition of that charming Richard Rodgers ballad, People Will Say We're in Hove.
That's all for this week. Till next time, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz this week were Francis Wheen, Jeremy Hardy, David Aronovich and Alan Corran. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news is read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by Ian Pattinson and Hugh Rycroft. The producer was John Rolfe.